were playing a game at the home of football up here, and he just happened to drop the old fella out on the field. And people used to say, how serious is the game of footy? Is that right? There was a bit of a rumour that he dropped the old fella out. And I do remember it. I was standing alongside G. Miles, and I looked at him, and he was giggling. And I said, what are you laughing for, you idiot? Get serious. They've got us on our own line. And he said, take a look at Bert. Take a look at him. Take a look at him. I said, don't look at him. We look at him. He's got us already. You know, it's the mental game. He said, nah, take a look at him. And I looked across, and he's pulled the shorts out, dropped the old fella out, and we're playing in front of 40,000 people.
Hey guys, before we start this episode, a big thanks to our major sponsor for the last couple of years, Southern Slugs. Speaking of the Southern Slugs, there's a great event happening in October this year in Croatia. The Australian men's and women's teams are heading over there to take on the Croatian national teams. The tour will be headlined by the one and only Kevin Sheedy, who'll be coaching both teams. Brent Harvey and Isaac Smith, speaking of legends, well, they'll be playing for the national men's team and doing school coaching clinics as well. How good is that? Tour dates are the 7th to the 15th of October. Also available are 6 nights cruising the Croatian coast on a 5-star boat or taking the Oktoberfest in Munich, Germany. I've done that before and it's unbelievable. So it's all thanks to Aussie Rules Global taking the game to the world. Head over to the Southern Slugs Facebook page for more details. Well, what a pleasure it is to have the one and only the King, Wally Lewis, on Sports Legends with Bevo for the first time.
Hey Bevo, nice to talk to you.
Now, Wally, you've recently been diagnosed with that CTE, which is a form of brain injury, and you're over in Canberra talking to parliamentarians about it. Tell us more about what CTE is and, you know, I guess what they're doing at the moment to, to make people more aware of what's happening.
Yeah, well, I guess I've become associated with it because it's a type of dementia that's associated with repeated head knocks. And I guess playing rugby league, it's just natural that you're going to get a bump to the head, suffer some concussions along the way, and learn to be dealing with the safe side of things instead of what we did, and I'm sure all other sports have tried to do over the years when we suffer the concussions. We get up and we lie to the trainer. We tell him we're okay. Yep, everything's okay. I'm going back out there in the field. Don't try and stop me. That seemed to be the right thing to do and the best way of trying to impress your mates. But to be honest, it's not good. The long-term effects for certainly for many of the people, I find that they have severe issues with their memory loss, and that's something that I've had to deal with. It's not, you know, just forgetting to get the carton of milk when you go down to the shop to fill the things that you're chasing. It really does have some other issues as well, in particular mood changes, and that was something that I found wasn't too comfortable at all. And after denying that I was dealing with it and basically lying about it when asked by those that were just trying to help me out, I had to admit it. And particularly when I had such an important role reading the sports news for Channel 9 in Brisbane. There were a couple of occasions where I just forgot what I was supposed to be doing, despite hearing it in the earpiece a minute or so earlier. At the end of this next story, we'll get you to do something else. And that turned out to be a little bit of a difficulty for me.
And when were you starting to get these symptoms? When did you start feeling like something wasn't right?
I guess over to say that they gradually started to play a role over the last 10 years. And I was like many of the others that are dealing with it. We almost adopt an instant style of denial. We think, oh, well, it's just something. And everybody, you know, has the, I went to the shop, but I forgot to pick up the bread while I was down there. There were different things that I was dealing with. And I just thought that it was just a short-term memory issue for me. And to be honest, everybody has some issues throughout the course of every day where they just simply forgot to do something, and it was seen as something that was very soft. It wasn't a serious effect on your health and well-being. But when I started to hear, particularly from a number of the other guys that were involved in rugby league as well, and other sports in the AFL in particular, it started to become a much more serious issue that I was dealing with every day. The biggest problem was I often wished that the defence that I had when I was playing footy was as strong as the defence that that came forward in the denial stages when I was talking about it. I simply lied and basically said, I don't notice that. No, it's not a problem for me. It's not an issue. I'm okay. It was just a simple little bit of a memory loss. Everybody has that. But I had the full realisation that it appeared to be consistently increasing.
And did you find as well, I know a close friend of yours, Paul Green, passed away from CTE. Did you feel as though that sort of gave you a bit of a drive to get checked as well?
That caused a bit of a drive for many rugby league players. They all knew Greeny. I was lucky enough to be a good friend of his, and his diagnosis of the advanced CTE really did him, well, it forced a lot of the guys, and his sad passing was something that made a lot of the big tough footy players become a lot softer. They started to all of a sudden, they've been dealing and being involved in a conversation with themselves in the denial. But suddenly, Paul's passing made a lot of the footy guys take the time to sit down and ask questions to the others. Do you have problems with this? Are these the issues that you seem to be dealing with most of all? And it it really was something that I think was a sad way of getting the other guys to take an approach which was seen as a natural progression. It wasn't something that that we wanted to do. But I think even the biggest, most tough footballers in the game, now they when they had the realisation that there could be something that is going to control the rest of their life, many of those guys, myself included, finally stopped being so ignorant of the facts, the cold hard facts in front of us, and sought medical assistance. And when that message was given to us by the doctors, you swallow hard, you swallow long, and you swallow quite often. But the realisation is that unless you deal with it and deal with it in the best possible way after the admission, you're not going to stand much of a chance at all of getting a little bit better.
And obviously in the AFL and rugby, they're really stamping out concussion at the moment and doing different things, and we're seeing it with junior sport as well. Do you feel as though they're doing the right things at the moment with contact sport, Wally, or is there things that they can do better?
Oh yeah, well certainly they've started it. The ball is rolling, and there's an opportunity for people to be able to benefit in the best way possible. I was very lucky in that I had some wonderful assistants, Dr. Rowena Mobbs. I can still remember. I've always enjoyed jumping on a flight and going down to Sydney with something attached to rugby league. But on this occasion, I was going down to see Rowena to go through. I had some issues. She conducted an MRI scan plus a PET scan as well. And I was sitting back, and when I went through and I was being asked a whole pile of questions as well, you kind of know that you're failing in some way, shape or form. There are some, you know, when she was asking me a couple of the questions, I swallowed hard before I delivered the reply. And to be honest, I knew that I was pretty much giving myself up. It was an admission that there was some real issues there for me. But to be honest, I was after the best possible results that I could get from her. And that was her expertise in being able to deliver that information to me. After it came along, and I still remember the look upon her face, though, when she asked me to come forward with a little bit of a list of the repeated head knocks that I'd suffered over the years. And I just remember her mouth sort of opened a little bit, and she sort of looked at me and the eyes opened. And I described to her one of the first appointments that I had with a doctor about CTE injuries. And his question was to me, and it was a simple one. He said, how many times would you say that you've suffered concussion, the CTE, the head knocks? And my reply was, what, an average every year? And he looked at me and he went, how many have you had? And I said again, well, I'm only asking, are you saying per year or total? And he was absolutely gobsmacked. And I said, oh, I don't know. You have, you know, six or seven 1 year. You might have any for the next year. And I often used to blame myself for putting my head in the wrong position when it came to defence in rugby league, making sure the tackles were in the right place. If I put my head in the wrong spot, there was a fair chance that I was going to get a knee in the temple or in the head and get knocked out, get up, fall over, get up, fall over. The trainer would come out, and most footy players were all the same. The trainer would say, you okay? Yeah, I'm okay. I'm okay. And you're running back and you think, where the hell am I running to? Which direction? Oh, that's my team. And I had a recollection of something that when I first came into first grade football, I was watching a guy that was playing for a club that I was playing for. He transferred to that club from another one. When he put his head in the wrong spot, he got up, and I remember he was severely concussed, and he ran back to stand in the defensive line of the club that he used to be at. And he was basically there, and the referee, everyone stopped they stopped the game, and everyone was sort of finding it amusing that he was standing in the wrong team. But that was the concussion that he'd suffered, and he had some real issues with it, and was regarded as one of the best tacklers, the best hitters in the game. Yet here he was being the guy that that was dealing with the concussion, and everyone said, "Oh, he'll be right. You know, he's tough. He'll recover from that." So that's the way it probably can be best described in all sports by a lot of the guys. We like to try and, you know, bring out that we are the tough guys, and nothing can hurt us. Nothing can get over the top of us, and it's something which now is being dealt with quite seriously.
Now, Wally, I played Aussie rules for a number of years, not ever at a high level, just locally, and like a lot of players, you know, like, you know, you copy hits here and there, and it's a physical game, the same as rugby league. And do you feel as though, I mean, it's really tricky, isn't it? Because you don't want to ruin the fabric of the game, because rugby league, Aussie rules, they're great games. We all love it, but it's really tricky, isn't it? Because you want to sort of maintain that focus on concussion and the head knocks, but then you don't want to affect the game as well. At the same time, we're seeing a lot with Aussie rules. They're changing the rules around, and people are getting annoyed about it. So it must be really difficult at the moment.
Oh, Bebo, we seem to have more care and attention for the game than we do for our own health and well-being. you know, we don't want to see a bad name for the game. Well, we get knocked around and hammered, and I can understand exactly what you're saying, and I've done it in trying to be defensive. I work for Channel 9, and there was a bit of a request that I go and take on a bit of a serious story to, you know, almost damage rugby league, and I didn't think that was a good idea. There were a lot of questions that were going on from my boss at work, and I kept sort of saying, oh yeah, it's a bit of an issue, but, and there would always be that three-letter word come in the defence department, but, you know, it's something, it was my fault anyway, because I wasn't tackling correctly, I didn't do it that way, and you try and look after the game that we were fortunate enough to be to dealing with, but, you know, the things are that we now, our number one priority in life wasn't about the love, the feeling, and the enjoyment that we got from the sports that we played. It was about dealing with the health issues that were going to become an enormous part of the rest of our lifetime, and it's very difficult.
Yeah, we'll move on anyway to the situation recently, because we saw in the first round of rugby league there was a couple of games being played in Las Vegas of all places. What was your thoughts on that, Wally?
Yeah, Las Vegas. It's not the first time that they've been to the United States. We went over there a few years ago, quite a few years ago, went back in the days when I was playing, and we actually played a state of origin game, and it was in Long Beach, California. We enjoyed the game. We were all about promoting rugby league in the best way possible. I think it started in the opening minutes. There was an all-in brawl. The bosses of the game didn't think that was the best way to promote the game. And to be honest, it took place at the end of the Rugby League State of Origin campaign. We'd already won the series. New South Wales beat us that night. And they were saying, yep, so that means the series is 2-2. And we said, we've already won the series. We've already lifted the trophy. We're the champs here. The New South Wales team, they went straight home after the game, after the shower. They went straight out to the international airport in LA. They flew home. And the Queensland team, we went to Las Vegas. That's a bit of a congratulations, boys. You've won the series for us. We went there and got to enjoy the thrills and spills of Las Vegas. To see that the game transferred there was something quite extraordinary. Is rugby league ever going to make it in LA? In Las Vegas? No, I don't think you're ever going to take the sports off them. But it was a very big attempt to be able to get over to the top and impress people there. Apparently, so we're reading in the paper almost daily now, is that it has made a real move into the United States, and there are lots of people contacting the bosses of the game over there who have now become quite a regular conversation with the Australian guys, and there will be. They are quite confident that rugby league will be set up there. I think if they're trying to think that it's ever going to become involved with gridiron American football, they're not quite being as honest as we'd like them to be.
Oh, it's good to see them doing something different anyway. So now let's get back to your own career, Wally. Where did it all begin for you? And how did you first get that passion for rugby? Was it through someone from the family, or how did you first get into the sport?
Yeah, I was born into rugby league. I was born, my dad played first grade football. He later went on to be a first grade coach in the competition here in Brisbane. My mum, she was a pretty handy sports person. She played for Queensland in netball and was insistent that the kids play footy. It was rugby league or rugby league. The parents' choice certainly gave me the opportunity to be involved in that. I played my first game in under eights. And that was what it was all about, and had the opportunity of being taught by two very handy sports parents in the mistakes that I was making on the field. And it was always, they were happy if we won the game, but Dad always used to have a little bit of a look at it. Yes, but you made you may have made two tries out there today, but you also missed four or five tackles, and that cost your team a couple. He'd always find the things that I did wrong throughout the course of the game, and said, if you ever want to make it to the top, you've got to make sure that you get out of the mistakes in your game. They're the one that will cause grief and harm for the outcome of the game, and also for your long-term enjoyment of footy. They were wonderful parents, gave me a great time, and I think the moment that I recall most is the first time that I was selected to play for Australia. I was the only Queenslander picked in the team. We were playing at the Sydney Cricket Ground, and I remember looking up into the grandstand, seeing my mum and dad sitting there. We were doing the national anthem just prior to running onto the field right in front of the main grandstand. And I looked up and I could see my father. He was in tears. He denied it. He said there was dust. There was a lot of dust at the Sydney Cricket Ground. It was getting in my eyes, and Mum rolled her eyes. She just said, yep, he was in tears. And I kind of felt that I'd repaid them for all the help and assistance that they gave me throughout the course of my footy career. I know I was the worst possible son. Dad used to work right over the other side of Brisbane. He'd drive home through the traffic and be buggered. The last thing he wanted to do was go upstairs and then have a son say, come on, Dad, teach me a couple more skills. Teach me what's the best way to do it. Teach me how to do this. And every day I wanted to learn a new skill, a new have some attitude about always be willing to learn. In that case, I think I was given enormous support from folks that that always had time to help the kids out. And I had three brothers. They all played footy as well. All did pretty well for themselves. So it was a case of enjoying the in the game and rewarding my mum and dad in some way, shape, or form.
And no doubt that would have been an interesting, early childhood as well, growing up with three siblings. So I can imagine some pretty good backyard games of sport there, Wally.
Unfortunately, that was the case. I guess by being the eldest, I had the chance of, getting it over them a little bit. I remember my middle brother, Scott, I got to enjoy plenty of footy with him throughout my career in first grade. But he was probably the quickest in the family. And I remember this one afternoon he ran, he came to my right shoulder. I picked him up and speared him into the ground. He actually landed on the old concrete path that used to lead up to the clothesline.
Oh, no.
And it broke his collarbone, and he had a bone that was sort of sticking up like that. And I said, "You go upstairs and tell mum and dad, and that's it. I'll kill you. Don't you dare do that." And he went upstairs and he sat there at the dinner table, and mum kept saying, "Eat your dinner. Use your right hand. You're not left-handed." And he started crying, and then they found out, and I got to test the strength of my father's belt that afternoon or that evening. I can tell you, I got a flogging. He went up to the hospital, the poor kid, and he broke his collarbone, and that was one of the lessons that I learned at life. It was imperative to perfect the skills of the game, in particular the tackling one, and be smart enough not to do it to your brother when you know that your father certainly isn't going to smile upon it.
Oh, that's a great story. And let's talk about your career as well, Wally, because unbelievable record, 31 games of State of Origin for Queensland, majority of those were as captain, and then 34 appearances for the green and gold. Tell us about some of your career highlights though, over the years.
I still remember the first game, the first State of Origin game I got to play. The first game I got to play for Queensland, there used to be a lot of argument in those days. Were you lucky to get picked to play for Queensland? We used to get thrashed year after year after year. If Queensland won a game, it was a high celebration for everyone. We'd celebrate for days, weeks after that. It just didn't happen too much. We had a call, bring State of Origin back. It's introduce State of Origin. They play it, down south, and Victoria and South Australia were the two teams that we sort of first heard the talk about how strong it is for State of Origin, the pride, the love of representing. And we got the chance to play one of those in 1980. I remember that. I was 20 years of age and got picked to play alongside some of the greatest players Australia's ever produced, Arthur Beetson in particular. He was one of them, and we got the chance. And we never used to beat New South Wales, or it was once in a very blue moon. That night we got to beat New South Wales 20 points to 10. The celebration had started, but more importantly, what had started was State of Origin. The interstate football was about to become live and kicking all over with the pride about being able to win. Now, decades later, of course, it's magnificent, the State of Origin campaign each and every year. But I've got to say the proudest day for me, it was the time that I got to play for Australia the first time. Again, my parents were very impressed, but the feeling that I got about I was the only Queenslander in the team and had to, in some way, shape or form, get to produce my best game. That continued on, and I was lucky enough to, in the years that followed, I was named Australian captain. That was the proudest day of my footy career. Going onto the field wearing the green and gold jersey, and you feel 10 foot tall, bulletproof, and like that. It's the first game of the rest of your career that's about to take place. I'm not going to waste this. I'm going to go out there. I'm not going to miss a tackle. I'm not going to let the opportunity to be creative just sit and not be used. I think that's that's the way that it is for all sports people. When you get that opportunity, it's important that you go on with it and you make the most of that chance. It's fantastic. I do remember the opportunities as well, the honour of captaining in Australia on the Kangaroo Tour, which is touring Papua New Guinea, England and France for three and a bit months. To go away on that tour in 1986 as captain was probably the greatest moment of my football time, and still remember being out in the middle. I used to watch those in the days when it was on black and white TV. The Australians would be playing Great Britain in these games, and we'd get up at 2 o'clock in the morning or whatever it was to watch these games. And I can remember my father used to say, that's got to be your biggest target in life, to be over there, to be on those grounds in front of all those pommies that are booing the Australian team, and have that that opportunity to make them go home pulling the handkerchief out of their pocket. Got the chance to do that and remember that. And that was a day also that my mother and father went over. They followed me on that tour, and I still remember, and I talk about it quite often actually, looking up to the grandstand. I'm thinking, here I am sitting in front of what, 60,000 people or however many were there at the game. But I kind of knew where they were sitting because all the green and gold colours were in this one section. And I got to look up into the stand, and I was enormously thankful for what my parents had done for me to give me that that opportunity in life.
In terms of the funny characters, obviously you play with some absolute greats, Wally, but who are some of the funny characters that you play with, whether it be for Australia or club or state of origin?
There's lots of those. Alan Langer is one of them. I remember when he first came into state of origin football for the first time. He was just a kid from Ipswich that a lot of people said, oh, he's lucky. He's lucky to be in the side. He got the chance to be involved in an Origin game. The first night obviously is one that we have a drink to celebrate our selection in the team, and he was just a young kid. He didn't know who to sort of hang around too much, but he was rooming with me the next day. We had to travel. We were going to Sydney, and I couldn't wake him up. Couldn't get him up. We made sure that I did get him up. He packed his bag and he went down, sat on the bus to go out to the airport. He slept all the way on the bus to the airport, got out to go into the lounge had another little bit of a snooze before we made our way onto the plane. And then of course, took his seat on the plane, slept all the way to Sydney, got off, got on the bus, had another snooze on the way to the hotel. And then when we got to the hotel, of course, it was start training. That was his introduction. And from that moment, Alf kind of realised that was part of State of Origin. He had an absolute magnificent game. Plenty of people doubted his abilities, but he went on to prove what a sensational footballer he was. And it was an opportunity for him to book a spot in that side. Some of the other guys that have always played an enormous role, Paul Vorton. I played against Paul all the way from, the under-8s, under-10s, where he was playing in the same position I was, but for a club over the other side of town. He was a situation where, we'd always tell each other that we were better footballers than what they were. he used to blow up a little bit and say, you're the laziest bastard that I've ever had as a teammate anyway. You make me do all of your work. Steve Blocker-Roach was another. We had some great times on a Kangaroo tour. I still remember Block coming down, having to question a car that we used to buy whilst we were away. Being in England and France for 3 months, you needed a little bit of opportunity to go and have a little bit of a tour around, see the countryside. And we had the challenge of being partners in the sale of a car. To cut a long story short, when the car arrived, when this guy brought it around, we were just buying it out of the paper. There was a little bit of rubbishing going on about the standard of the car. It didn't please Steve Roach too much because it was a very small car that we bought, and to see him, he's about 125, 128 kilos or something, sitting in the back of a little four-wheel drive. It reminds you of the Munsters, the old day one. Gene Miles, I probably got made look like a much better footballer in my lifetime by having two of the most gifted footballers ever playing outside me, Gene Miles and Mel Meninga. Mel, of course, went on to captain Australia and was a remarkable player. And every time that I used to have the ball in my hands and I'd be looking out, I'd try and look at the opposition defence and I could see them. And they were pretty much in fear. The thought process was going through, who am I going to take here? Do I take Miles? Do I take Meninga? Do I take Lewis in the way that they're coming around? And it was pretty easy to sort of pick out who was being really affected by the nerves, and they were usually the people on the occasion. And there was a guy that I'll let his name remain quiet at this stage, but we were playing a game at the home of football up here, and he just happened to drop the old fella out on the field. And people used to say, how serious is the game of footy? Is that right? There was a bit of a rumour that he dropped the old fella out. And I do remember it. I was standing alongside Gene Miles and I looked at him and he was giggling. And I said, what are you laughing for, you idiot? Get serious. They've got us on our own line. And he said, take a look at Bert. Take a look at him. Take a look at him. I said, don't look at him. We look at him. He's got us already. You know, it's the mental game. He said, nah, take a look at him. And I looked across and across. He's pulled the shorts out, dropped the old fella out, and we're playing in front of 40,000 people, and he's dropped it out. And thankfully, the thing was that there weren't as many cameras as what there are now. Now there's about 30 cameras on the field; they're all over. There used to be the camera looking down upon the field, and one at each end, and that was it. So he got to enjoy the embarrassment factor of doing that. Which, geez, I'd never do that. I can guarantee that. There'd be the embarrassment there. Is that it? You've got nothing to brag about.
What a way to finish off there, Wally. Unbelievable. Just before I let you go, Wally, just a really important mention here. The National Dementia Helpline, the number is 1-800-100-500. That's 1-800-100-500. It operates 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And there's also a website as well. It's https://www.dementia.org.au/helpline. So a really important website and a phone number there as well. So if anyone feels as though they need to talk to the National Dementia Helpline, give that number a call. Wally, it was so great to chat with you today. We could talk all day, mate. Thanks so much for giving up your time and sharing some amazing stories and all the very best with everything going forward with CTE as well.
Yeah, thanks very much, mate. If you don't mind, I'd just like to throw in one line I do at the end of every one. I'm very proud to be an ambassador of Dementia Australia, and I'd just like to bring up the point to everybody. We hear a lot about it, and we hear about the head knocks that the footy players suffer throughout the course of their lifetime, and is that the reason that they're dealing with CTE? Well, it doesn't only affect those people that are involved in contact sports or any sports at all. It affects the defence personnel who are exposed to the explosives, domestic violence victims, plenty of people from all walks of life that are having to deal with it. The best thing that I can give an advice is don't hide from it. Don't be embarrassed to say that you've been dealing with it. Put your hand up and just try and get the best possible advice that you can and the support that you get from the medical staff, the wonderful medical staff we have in this country.
Absolutely well said. Like the king that you are, thanks so much for joining us again, Wally. Really great to chat and hopefully look forward to meeting you in person one of these days.
Thanks, mate. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Cheers, mate. Thank you.